It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. U.S. intelligence officials said yesterday that Russia created the conditions that led to the downing of a Malaysia Airlines passenger jet over eastern Ukraine, but stopped short of directly linking Moscow to the fatal missile strike. The officials said they did not know who fired the missile or whether any Russian operatives were present at the launch. Russia took control of the eastern Ukraine city of Crimea shortly after citizens this winter ousted pro-Russian President Viktor Yanukovych. Since then, the separatists have fought with central government forces in eastern Ukraine. In many ways, Ukraine is still trying to find its footing in the wake of the events of the past winter. One Westerner trying to help the new Ukrainian regime is University of Pittsburgh economics professor Tim Milovanov, a native of Ukraine who was invited to participate in economic talks with the new prime minister there. He joins us now by phone from Kiev. Professor Milovanov, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. Hello.
You arrived in Kiev shortly after the passenger jet was shot down. Describe what the mood in that city was like when you arrived.
Surprisingly quiet. It's a little bit of a surreal feeling. It is as if there were no war. There were no military or uniformed police on the streets, and everything was very, very quiet.
What are the Ukrainian government officials you've spoken with? What are they saying about who is responsible for shooting the plane down?
People are focusing actually on reforms. It seems to be a consensus here that the separatists are responsible for shooting down the plane, and it's almost not being discussed.
The Ukrainian government says it has no surface-to-air missiles in that area. Do you believe that it is telling the truth?
The Ukrainian government has missiles, but it is likely that they don't have it in the area because the missiles have a relatively small range.
What is the level of frustration there over the inability of officials to access the site of the crash, which reportedly is being sanitized by the separatists, cleared of any evidence that might prove that they, with the support of the Russian government, are responsible for shooting down the plane? What sorts of things are you hearing from government officials and maybe just the average Ukrainian in the street?
I think people were expecting something like that to take place. It is a consistent pattern of resistance from the separatists to all kinds of humanitarian, refugee, and in this case, investigative effort. So there is nothing. This is nothing new for the Ukrainian public or for officials. And in that sense, we don't hear much of the frustration with this specific incident, but rather overall frustration with the situation.
And what is the average Ukrainian citizen saying? What is the feeling of the citizens there about this situation and what it might lead to?
I think Ukrainians hope that it will bring spotlight to the east of Ukraine, and the west will understand the kind of situation that Ukrainians are facing currently fighting with the separatists. So the hope is that because there will be international investigation, there will be international observers, there will be more credibility, and there will be better quality evidence about what's actually going on in the East. And people hope that finally the story will be heard, and it will not be just the word of the Ukrainian government against the word of the Russian government, but it will be some kind of truth that will be revealed.
So that whatever the separatists are doing in the eastern part of Ukraine, whether it's, if in fact they did launch a missile, even if it was inadvertently that knocked this plane out of the sky, or whatever it is they're doing, you're saying this will lead to better accountability?
That's right. That's right.
Have you spoken to anyone in the separatist movement? Do they, in other parts of Ukraine, beyond the eastern border, do they make themselves known? And is there any kind of dialogue that occurs? And have you been able to gauge their feelings about this incident?
I have not talked to the separatists, but I have talked to people from the region who are sympathetic to the separatists.
And what are they saying?
Well, they share the idea that likely to be some kind of conspiracy set up by the West to make the separatists look bad.
Do you have any feelings about whether any citizens who side with the separatists might lose their sympathy for the movement after this horrific event?
I'm not sure that it will make any difference. In Ukraine, currently, just the number of military officers from the Ukrainian side which have been murdered or killed in the activities per day are running between 10 and maybe 20 people. We don't know the numbers from the separatists, and we don't really know the numbers from the civil population. So people dying in tents, it's an everyday reality. And it just, for the West, it was not obvious how horrific the situation is in the east of Ukraine currently. And because of 300 people dying, it now becomes obvious the degree of the violence in the area. But I think for Ukrainians and for people in the east in particular, this is reality, and they got used to it and they got a little bit numb about it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is University of Pittsburgh economics professor Tim Milovanov, a native of Ukraine, speaking with us by phone from Kiev. Professor Milovanov was invited to participate in economic talks with the prime minister there. And I understand that one of the things that you are doing in Ukraine is working with the government to help fix a fundamental constitutional flaw. Explain what that is and what you are doing to fix it.
This is a group of economists that I represent, and which share the idea that the governance structure in Ukraine is extremely centralized, reminding the governance structure that Ukraine inherited from the Soviet Union. And that centralized governance structure leads to the conflict within Ukraine. So the current Maidan, which is the word for the protest, is nothing new for Ukrainian public. We have seen one in 2004, which was called Orange Revolution. But if you look at the data, protests of that type are frequent and recurrent. The issue is that the political elite cannot renew itself within the political process, and therefore we see conflicts of the type that we're observing currently. Our attempt is to make people of Ukraine and also government officials, as well as experts and journalists, to be aware of the systemic problem. And so my visit here is a part of this effort.
And to help the people listening understand exactly what this problem is, as I understand it, that the government is centralized, and by that, everything happens from the capital on out, that there is no local and regional government, such as in the United States, where you have a state government or a city government that runs things, that the officials that are appointed in other parts of the Ukraine, it comes from the central government, so there is no local accountability. Is that right?
That's right, broadly speaking. To give a specific example, I will use what I heard from a refugee effort coordinators earlier this week. They tried to get a permission from the government to use internet in one of the bases in the east to coordinate a refugee effort. In order for that to get done, they had to talk to an official at the level of a general inside one agency in Kyiv, because at the lower level it was impossible to decide. This is just ridiculous from the Western standards.
And I understand that one of the major problems in Ukraine has been extensive corruption. Is that being addressed? And if so, how?
The government is well aware as well as of the corruption problem, and it's trying to do what it can, but it's an extremely difficult problem. First of all, there are a lot of powerful people who are inside the government who benefit from corruption, and there will be resistance to that. On top of that, there is a pervasive culture of corruption among Ukrainian population in general. Everyone is used to giving bribes and to collecting bribes when an opportunity presents itself. So the problem is understood or at least acknowledged, and the government is trying to find a way to fight corruption within the system, which is itself very corrupt. So it's an extremely challenging problem.
And when we talk about corruption, are we talking about bribes, kickbacks, that type of thing?
Yes, it's we're talking about direct bribes and cutbacks and not merit-based appointments, but maybe price or connection-based appointments, diversion of resources, and other pretty primitive and direct forms of corruption.
So what does the Ukrainian government need to do in order to strengthen its economy, assuming that that is one of the ways that Ukraine can stand alone and maybe be able to gain some level of independence, to be independent from Russia and maybe from other areas where they typically depend on economic help?
So I think the government is trying to do some things which are very good. They're trying to increase transparency and accountability within the government to make access to information better, to involve public, to improve media accountability or coverage of the government actions. And so this is all good. But that's not enough. And I think the government also is trying to look and should be trying to look to bring inside the government the new people who have so far been sidelined and frustrated by their inability to help people. The issue here is that the political establishment consists from experts who have been working on the same topics for maybe 15, 20 years, and these guys pretty much have post-Soviet Union mentality. So that needs to be changed. The core of people within the government has to go, and new people with a more modern, more westernized views have to come to power. If that happens, Ukraine has a chance of succeeding. If we will observe just rotation of the same very old people through the new positions which are being created by the government, then it's unlikely there will be any change in Ukraine.
How dependent is Ukraine on the Russians for sources of energy, especially natural gas? And can Ukrainians ever truly be independent of Russia without being energy independent?
It's a very difficult question to ask. The Ukrainian economy is quite integrated with the Russian economy, and it will be a painful process to adjust to the new reality where the relationship with Russia is severe. The government is acknowledging it and is working hard, as far as I can see, to try to improve independence of Ukraine from the Russian market. My understanding is that we can learn from the experience of Poland, which was highly dependent on the Soviet Union in early 90s, and they have managed to decrease this dependency quite a bit and increase their integration with the European Union, and that has been a successful project.
What kind of support does Ukraine need from the West, especially the EU?
I think the EU is doing what they can. They're trying to bring human capital, and they're trying to bring new people to bear on the reforms. I would just suggest that EU tries to persevere and not get frustrated by the current situation in the Ukraine. And if they push hard enough and continue to demand performance and reforms, I think the government will produce that. Just more pressure from the West, and more demand for higher quality of reforms.
How should the United States be supporting Ukraine? We've heard people like Senator John McCain say, for example, we should be providing Ukraine with missiles. If not weapons, what should the U.S. be doing for Ukraine or supplying Ukraine with?
This is a sensitive topic. I am not quite sure, and I'm not qualified to comment on whether military help would be effective in Ukraine. Many people think it will be, and it's necessary to provide maybe smart weapons or something like that to minimize the civilian population damage and losses in the east of Ukraine. I cannot comment on that. I think the U.S. is trying hard to offer the human capital capacity through the existing NGOs to facilitate reforms. And I think that needs to be encouraged. And the United States should not get all its attention put on the military effort or the military crisis in the east of Ukraine. It is important to remove the underlying cause of the crisis in Ukraine. And this cause is dysfunctionality of the government and the pervasive corruption in the country. And as long as that's not going to be addressed, address the crisis in the East and elsewhere in Ukraine will not be resolved. So the focus should be actually on forcing the current Ukrainian government to improve its institutions and to go ahead with reforms. Because unless the Ukrainian government can deliver changes in the economic growth, there will be future protests, there will be future crises, and there will be future polarization and disagreements within the country.
And that's what you're there to help with. And I realize you've only been there for about a week, but do you have a sense that you're starting to help make a difference, Professor?
My impression is that there are a lot of people sitting on sidelines who have human capacity and intellectual capacity to help with the reforms. But these people are frustrated because they aren't getting through, and the so-called expert community is as reactionary as some parts of the government. My impression is, and my effort is, to try to unify this community, understand who is effective, who can be effective in the future, and try to bring these people forward. I think if we can unify our efforts across different NGOs, across different new wave activists, across different Western-trained economists and other scientists, we might be able to make a difference.
How long will you be in Kyiv?
I will be here for a couple more weeks, and during this time I'll try to do the best I can to help this effort of unifying its intellectual capacity for the reforms.
My guest has been University of Pittsburgh economics professor Tim Milovanov, a native of Ukraine, speaking with us by phone from Kyiv. Professor Milovanov was invited to participate in economic talks with the prime minister there. Professor, thanks so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It was my privilege.
And more Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.